No, he was right here in front of me. I just.
Well, Anthony, before we get any further, then. How big is the flood, Anthony?
It tells it 6 and 7.
Okay, where does it say?
It says and it repented the Lord that he had made man on earth, and it grieved him in his heart. Mm-hmm. So it said, and the Lord said, I will destroy man from whom I have created from the face of the earth. He covered the whole earth. He
covered the whole thing.
He destroyed everything.
You're absolutely right. So why would people pop up and say something different?
They're not holding what I've got in my hand.
No, they hold the same book. They just don't read it the same way you do.
They read it like they want to.
I asked Dad, I was sitting there and thought about it, and I told her, I got all this reading. I said, it's right there. He just read it, and then he asked the question. I just didn't think about it.
Since we're on this subject, there is scientific evidence that points to a worldwide flood. Did you know that you can go up on the top of Grandfather Mountain, and in the rocks on Grandfather Mountain are sea creatures fossilized in the mountain on Grandfather Mountain?
I think they have found some like out in the desert, like out in the Badlands. I mean, out there in our country too, where it seems like it was at some point underwater. Some sea creatures are found out there in places that are obviously desert.
Right. The sedimentary rock, is built up from water, water stuff falling through the water and settling the sediment on the bottom of the water. And then fossils are on top of that, but in lots of places they have found places where this sedimentary rock is kind of squished up into the fossil record, like it wasn't completely solid when the fossils were there, and they say it's sort of akin to stepping on the mud and having it squish up between your toes. The weight of what was settling has squished this stuff up, so the rock hadn't solidified yet when the fossils were being deposited, kind of like in a flood. They found lots of evidence. Now, see, they date these fossils by the layers. All right, the older ones are on the bottom and the younger ones are on top. And that's how they, because of the layers, get these millions of years worth of evolution. But if that had built up before the rock solidified, you see how that turns the whole thing upside down? They find over and over again petrified trees that are sticking up through layers of fossils. Most all of these trees are missing their roots. They were torn up out of the ground. Now they'll find stumps in some places with the roots still attached. Like a flood came along and tore trees up out of the ground and stood them up in the mud, and fossils settled around them. So there's lots of evidence that points toward a worldwide flood. There's a branch of science that's studying it. But mainstream science refers to that as a pseudoscience. Just a bunch of crazy people. Don't bother them, because mainstream science says that the Earth is millions of years old, and because of that, evolution is what it is. Actually, they started with evolution and then worked logically back. This is what has to be for life to have been accidental. And life has to be accidental, otherwise we are actually accountable to God. What a mess that would be for mankind, wouldn't it, if we were actually accountable to God. That brings us to our lesson today. We're talking about Noah, and we want to look at a lesson in leadership from Noah. We can learn a lot from Noah. For example, who had the plan for the ark? God did. Look at chapter 7. Well, actually, I guess we need to back up in chapter 6. Verse 13 in chapter 6, God said to Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth." And then he starts into the description of what he wants. "Make thee an ark of gopher wood. Rooms shalt thou make in the ark, and shall pitch it within and without with pitch." And I like verse 15, "And this is the fashion which thou shalt make it of." It's like God says, "You see this? I want you to take a good look at this model, because this is what I want you to build." That's the idea. This is the fashion that I want you to do it in. Here's your picture. Here's your blueprint. Now build it. And then it goes on to describe the length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, the breadth of it 50 cubits, and the height of it 30 cubits. A window shalt thou make to the ark, and in a cubit thou shalt finish it above. And the door of the ark shalt thou set in the side thereof, with lower, second, and third stories shalt thou make it. Oddly enough, a three there, isn't it? Just a shadow, now that we know about the Trinity, God just shadows it right there for Noah. Verse 17, behold, I, even I, do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life from under heaven. And everything that is in the earth shall die. Then verse 18, but with thee will I establish my covenant. And thou shalt come in unto the ark, thou and thy sons, and thy wife and thy sons' wives with thee. And of every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort shalt thou bring into the ark to keep them alive with thee. They shall be male and female, of fowls after their kind, and of cattle after their kind, of every creeping thing of the earth after his kind. Two of every sort shall come unto thee to keep them alive. Think how much better off we'd be if two mosquitoes had not gotten on. And take thou unto thee of all food that is eaten, and thou shalt gather it to thee, and it shall be for food for thee and for them. Do you see God's plan? Pretty detailed, isn't it? I would love to have seen those blueprints. I'm sure they were perfect. Here's the number of rooms you need. Right here's where the door goes. Right here's where the window goes. Here's where you're going to store the food. There's three stories. It's all going to work out. Just follow my plan, Noah. And guess what? Verse 22, thus did Noah according to all that God commanded him. Isn't that a wonderful response? One of these lessons in leadership that I think we really need to understand is that it's God's plan. We just get to work in it. If we're not careful, we'll put a lot of emphasis on the programs that we have at the church, and I'm glad we have good programs. I'm really excited that we have such a youth program as we do here at the church. I love to see these teenagers get up and sing. Didn't they do good Wednesday night? Especially on that hymn. I'm a fan of the old hymn, so they won me over right there. But they're really starting to sound good. I am excited that we do all of those things. I'm really glad we have Sunday school. I know of a lot of churches that just quit having Sunday school. I'm glad we do all of these things. I'm glad we have a visitation program. I'm glad we minister to the old folks like we do. Even the old folks, the ones we call Jerry's kids, you know, and they meet upstairs and they ride the bus and go out and eat. I'm glad they do all of those kinds of things. That's not the core purpose of this church. That's not really God's ultimate plan for this church. Those are all things that we do because we like each other and we enjoy the fellowship. But what's God's plan? Have you thought about that? Are you participating in God's plan? Now, one of the things about God's plan is this, that everything has its season. Things come and things go. Nothing lasts forever. If you look around, how many churches do you see that are on fire today that are 100 years old? Now, there's churches on fire, but most of them are not 100 years old. There are a few churches around that are 100 years old. There's a couple of churches I know of that are 200 years old. I come through Bethania on my way to church, and I grew up in Bethania, and so there's the Moravian church there was established in 1759. Bethania was established in 1759. That church has been there for 250 years. I wouldn't really call it an on-fire church. They had a good preacher that came in when I was a boy, and it stands out. The church actually started growing, and then guess what? They threw the preacher out. Because so many people started coming to the church that they actually had to add on to the church. And by adding on to the building, they affected its historical significance. So they got mad at the church preacher, at the preacher. The church got mad at the preacher and threw him out because the church grew. That's just one story. If you look at churches in general, and this is my opinion, so okay, a bookmark goes here and I'll do an innings right here. You know, this is my opinion. That's all it's worth. A lot of churches start out on fire because they felt the presence of God. And in the midst of that, they're just excited about being in God's presence. They don't care about much else. They just enjoy being in God's presence. After a while, though, they start adding in all of these other things, and then there comes this desire to be, for lack of a better word, respectable. And so they start pulling back just a little bit because they want to dress right, and they want to talk right, and they want to look right, and they forget then to be in God's presence. And churches kind of grow old and cold because they've forgotten about God's presence. That's sad, but it happens over and over and over again. Harvard University, would you consider that a Christian college?
Used to be.
It was started to train preachers. But Harvard is as secular as, I mean, they're the epitome of being secular in this world. What about Yale or Oxford? They used to. They all started out as preacher schools. And then we come to modern-day preacher schools. I went to Piedmont Bible College down in Winston-Salem. It's now called Piedmont International University. There were some really godly professors there when I was there. I don't know so much about them now. I know they don't hold to the King James Bible anymore. There are individual professors that do. One of my old professors, Dr. Hoyle Bowman, Professor Bowman, they were having an alumni meeting and he was speaking there. And I went back, first time I'd been back in a long time. It was so good to hear him. He says, you know, I still believe the same things that I believed when I came here in 1956. What Piedmont Bible College taught me in 1956, he said, I still believe it. He says, still have an old Scofield Bible. He says, I wear one out about every 8 years. I'm like, man, I was 88 years old at this point. He says, I think I'm on my last one. I just bought a new one. He says, I think I'm on my last one. But he says, I still believe the same old things. And then he started laying out those things that he believed. The Bible is the inspired word of God. That God is faithful, that you know, and all of these things, that Jesus is the Christ, is God, and that Jesus will be offensive in this world, and that Jesus is the only way to salvation. And I was thinking, this is good. This is what I remember. But they don't hold the King James anymore. They've gone to modern versions. And it's true of a lot of the Bible colleges that used to be. They all kind of drift, and we all kind of get respectable. It's good to note, though, that Noah did according to all that God commanded him. Noah felt the presence of God. Now, with that in mind, we have to ask, does God have a plan for you? Anybody receive this plan from God on a stone? Y'all got plans for building an ark? How about a bomb shelter in your backyard? You know, anybody prepping? Because I want to come visit y'all. You know, I just, you know, got room for two more. Well, it'd be 8 or 9 or 10 more because I want to bring my kids and grandkids. So if y'all got a big bomb shelter, let me know. What's God's plan for you? One of the things that stood out to me as we were reading through the genealogies up until Noah, and in studying, reading about the genealogies that come after Noah, there's lots of folks listed there. The majority of them didn't build an ark. The majority of them lived and had children and died and were just faithful. Isn't that a precious promise? God doesn't expect arcs from all of us. Now, if God tells you to build an ark, start cutting trees, brother. That's all I'm saying. But are any of us getting too respectable to just be in God's presence? Do you know what it feels like just to be in God's presence? Can you let go of your respectability? Now, I have been in churches that promoted the hooting and the hollering. I'm not necessarily talking about that. If you're a hooter and a hollerer, I mean, if you go to the ball game and you get excited because your team scored a run, when the preacher's preaching and tells you you got a home in heaven for eternity with Christ and you don't think that's a home run, shame on you, okay? But if that's not your general attitude, don't pretend. Don't pretend in God's presence. I don't think when we get to heaven that, you know, as I have heard many say, that they're just going to shout heaven down. I think when we see Him high and holy, we're going to see us. And we're going to, the first thing is going to be, woe am I. You know, I don't belong here. Not until Christ comes and takes me by the hand and says, you're mine. Come with me. Now that gets me excited. And when I get excited, I get teary-eyed. That's my natural way. So, and the older I get, the more I cry. What does that say? My kids say, well, never mind what my kids say. So what's God's plan for you? We've been going through Ecclesiastes, and the preacher touched on this verse. We studied Ecclesiastes in here, and here is this verse. This really sums it up as good as any verse in the Bible. Ecclesiastes 12:13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. Do you know Him? Can you trust Him? Even when all He asks from you is just to remain faithful. Anthony, can you be a Christian and collect money? Yeah. You sure can. Rodney, can you be a Christian and have a man cuss in front of your son? It's hard, isn't it? There was a preacher in the mountains. He was a holiness preacher. One story stands out about him. His daughter married a man who beat her up. He was known for always carrying his Bible with him everywhere he went. You know, if you've met any holiness preachers, they wouldn't even carry their Bible like this. They would carry it like this so that, you know, the word Holy Bible would be out. And they carried it in front of them like this. That's kind of a lot of Baptists do it too. But he carried his Bible with him everywhere he went. He'd been preaching at this church for 50 years, or probably not quite that long at this time. But he went to the place where this man worked. And he took off his coat and he folded it up and he laid it down. And he took his Bible and he laid it on top of his coat. And he went in where this man worked and beat the daylights out of him. Just flailed the tar out of him. Come back out, picked up his Bible, put his coat on and went his way. He left the Lord outside while he went in and took care of business. I don't necessarily see that in Scripture. I understand where he's coming from. Can you really trust him? We are headed into dark times. No way around it. The government will eventually pass where we can't carry guns lawfully. The government will eventually pass that we can only attend certain churches. How will that affect your relationship with Christ? This church should be a supplement to your relationship with Christ. It should not be the heart of it. If this is the only place you open up your Bible, if this is the only place you pray, if this is the only place you act religious, you ain't got much. This is where we come so that we understand we're not alone. But then we go out into the world and we face them one-on-one. So we fear God and we keep his commandments. Generally speaking, there are not many conflicts between being a good Christian and being a lawful citizen. You're going to see that there's going to start to be conflicts. And then the question has to be, who do you serve? You will be called on probably in your lifetime to make that choice. But God has a plan. This is not taking him by surprise. Are you able to face that? Not alone. Are you ever going to be alone? Not if you're a child of his. We can do it. One step at a time, as we are called on. It was in this time of terribleness that Noah was asked to build an ark. It's in this time of terribleness that we're going to be asked to just be faithful. That's the plan. Now, there's also a call from God that starts in chapter 7. The Lord said unto Noah, come thou and all thy house into the ark, for thee have I seen righteous before me in this generation. This doesn't mean that Noah deserved it, but he trusted God. Trusted him. See, God came up with the plan, and Noah said, whatever God says, I'll do. Seen foolishness. Building an ark in an era where it had never rained, far away from water. And then it lays out exactly who gets to get on the ark. Noah gets to get on, his family gets to get on, and the animals get to get on. And verse 1 tells Noah to come and get on the ark, but have you seen any mention of rain yet? Not yet. Where does the rain come at? Well, it comes on down in a few more verses. Verse 4, actually, is where it's at. Verse 1, Noah's told to get on the ark. Verse 4 says it's going to be 7 days before it starts raining. But get on the ark now. Isn't that interesting? Get on the ark 7 days before it starts raining. We're a little farther down the road. We have a little more revelation from God. What we have ascertained from the Bible in our studies is that there's the next thing on the prophetic calendar for God. It's called the rapture of the church. You heard about this? Where the Lord's going to come and he's going to snatch out those that belong to him. And then there's a period of tribulation and testing, a judgment that lasts for 7 years. At the end of the 7 years, Christ himself will come back and will judge the nations and then will set up his kingdom. 7 days, 7 years. There's that echo again, that picture of a seven. It's not by accident. Come get on the boat, he says. There's 7 days coming. Now, there are those who are raptured out. If we'll remember back a few weeks ago, we talked about Enoch, who walked with the Lord, and then he just was not because God took him. That's kind of like the rapture. Noah is a picture of those of the Israelites that will actually live through those 7 years of tribulation. That's what the real picture about this is. The nation of Israel, in the book of Revelation, it talks about 144,000 that will be sealed. The judgment that comes in those 7 years is actually a judgment on Israel, not on the church. Israel will be tested. Why? Because they rejected the Messiah. Their whole culture was geared toward God sending the Messiah to deliver them. They were told the time that he would be born. They were told the place that he would be born. They were told the things that he would do. There was one who came before him that heralded the coming of the Messiah. And then he steps on the scene. And they missed it. Why? Because he didn't come like they wanted him to. We can miss it too in this time of trouble, when God doesn't react like we think he ought to, guess what? He's going to do what he knows best. Can you trust him? No rain yet, but the rain's coming. Rain's coming in our lives too, I guess. But they missed it. And for this past 2,000 years, God has been giving them and us an opportunity. Grace to accept that Messiah. He's not our Messiah, he's our Savior, but he is the Messiah of the Jews. And it seems like that when a Jewish individual is converted and recognizes who Jesus is, they don't pray to the Lord Jesus like we do. I heard one Jewish convert, and he prayed and he said, "My Jesus." That makes it precious, doesn't it? The one whom we pierced, they're going to recognize him. Then at the end of that 7 years when he comes back, he'll set up his kingdom. He'll sit on David's throne in Jerusalem. And when anybody asks, "Who are you?" he's going to say, "Look at my hands, look at my feet, look at my side. I am the one that you killed. I am Jesus." Now, Noah's response, verse 5, isn't it oddly similar? Noah did according to all that the Lord commanded him. Verse 6 says, Noah was 600 years old when the floodwaters was upon the earth. That means I've got a few more good years left. You're never too old. Think about that. Now, we come skipping quickly down to verse 16 because it's important to note here that they went in, male and female of all flesh, as God had commanded him. And then the last part of that verse says, and the Lord shut him in. Noah was not commanded to shut the door. God shut the door. So when do you get to quit sharing the gospel? You don't. God does. Listen to an atheist on the radio Friday as I was coming home. He was, I don't know whether y'all are aware or not, but Wednesday was the National Day of Prayer. And he had problems with that. So he had come out with his own proclamation that he was trying to promote about a National Day of Reason that would be on the same day. And raising reason and scientific evidence and scientific thought to the same level as prayer. And Michael Medved was the show's host. Michael Medved is a Jew, but he says, "I believe in God." He says, "I pray to God." And the guy just went off at that point. He said, "Well, that's the problem. When they say praying to God, that makes me, who doesn't, a second-class citizen. I'm just tired of them shoving Jesus down my throat." And he just kind of went off. And I got to thinking, I guess there may be some instances where people share Christ in a condescending way, or that way of where I'm better than you are. There may be some of that, but I think the general consensus is that we share Christ because without Christ there is no hope. We share Christ because we're trying to show the love of God. You have every right to choose to do whatever you want to, but without Christ there is only hell. Without Christ, there is no relationship with God. Without Christ, there is nothing. When I share Christ, I'm sharing hope. Not that my life's going to be better or that I'm going to be richer or anything like that, but that God loved me. And God will love you too. In fact, he does love you. He's paid for your sin. You don't go to hell because of sin. You go to hell because you rejected the only way to go to heaven. You rejected Christ. But there will come a day when the Lord will shut the door. That's not today. Aren't you glad? It's not today. Now, if we... Back up one. Come on. Whoa. All right. Technology, isn't it wonderful? Hebrews chapter 6, the great faith chapter, talks about Noah. But the verse before it says, without faith it is impossible to please him, to please God. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. And then it talks about Noah. By faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. I don't have to condemn the world, their actions. I just need to cling to Christ. They're going to get mad at me because I'm doing right. They got mad at Daniel because they couldn't find any fault in him. They got mad at the Lord because he did what was right. And they'll get mad at you too because you did what was right. Everybody wants you on their level, which means they're crooked. They feel really uncomfortable around people that aren't crooked. What are you up to? There's some kind of joke. Sometimes they know you're up to something, they just don't know what it is. Really, just don't be up to anything. Just be one of God's children. That's the condemnation, and they can't stand it. Now, we asked again, how big was the flood? We had that verse in Genesis chapter 6, but if you look at these in Genesis chapter 7 and 8 and 9, again, it talks about, covers the whole world. I hope you're settled with that. The compromise started in the 1820s. A scientific reason began to rise, and this idea began being promoted over and over again that the world was millions of years old. Well, if the world was millions of years old, then the sedimentary rock really had to have formed millions of years ago and really couldn't have formed in the midst of a flood that happened about 7,000 years ago. Doesn't add up. So we need to change to accommodate what scientific reason has and their dogma has said is the way that it is. So it started happening in about the 1820s. As evolution began to rise, theologians said, well, you know, we got to be relevant. Looks like science is proving the Bible to be false. Let me just be very plain. If there was not a worldwide flood, then God lied to us in Genesis, which means God lied to us in the book of John. And John 3:16 isn't true if the Genesis account isn't true. If the flood was just a local flood, then why would Noah need an ark? He could just hike over the hill. God could have revealed to him that there was going to be a destruction in that general area, and he could have just hiked over the hill, right? And the Lord led Noah to a safe valley. Why would there need to be an ark? And why would you put birds on an ark? And mosquitoes. All right? Now, the account of the flood says that the waters covered the mountains. 15 cubits over the highest mountain. Everything was covered. If it was a localized flood, how could the water cover the mountains? It's just going to run through the valley till it finally, makes a big lake, which you're going to see the mountains all the way around. Okay? And if it was a local flood, think about this. Most people would have escaped God's judgment. Do you really believe that God is going to let most people escape his judgment? No. If it was a localized flood, then it's localized judgment, and God's only mad at a few people. God's not mad at any of us. And then you'd have to start arguing, well, God will only redeem a few, and God will only punish a few, and for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. But then the verses right after that comes, this is the condemnation, that light was coming to the world and men loved darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. There is evil in this world. And it's on the rise. but that doesn't take God by surprise.
Yeah.